you. Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is America's Marine Highways. Please be advised that today's seminar is being recorded. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference for the audio know that you do need to mute your computers, or else you'll be hearing the audio over the computer as well. Today we'll have two presenters, Lauren Brand of the Maritime Administration and Barbara Nelson of the Richmond, Virginia MPO. Lauren Brand is the Director for the Office of Marine Highway and Passenger Vessels for the Maritime Administration, a part of the U.S. Department of Transportation. In this role, she is responsible for carrying out MARAD's mission to improve and strengthen the U.S. marine transportation system to meet the economic and security needs of the nation. Prior to this, she was the South Atlantic Gateway Director for MARAD. Barb Nelson is a Principal Transportation Planner for the Richmond MPO. She has been in this position for just over 5 years, with an additional 20 years of planning experience. Her responsibilities at the Richmond Area MPO include Transportation Improvement Program Manager, Project Manager for the 64 Express, and is also responsible for managing the following programs: Intermodal, Bicycle, Pedestrian, and Citizen Outreach. Today's seminar will last approximately 90 minutes, with 60 minutes for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, please type it into the chat area. Please make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. Presenters will not be answering the questions during their presentations, but I'll start off the Q&A session with the questions typed into the chat box. Once we get through all the questions that have been typed in, if there's still time, the operator will give you instructions on how to ask the question over the phone. If you think of a question after the seminar, you can send it to the presenters directly, or I encourage you to use the Freight Planning Listserv. If you haven't already joined the listserv, the web address at which you can register is provided on the slide on your screen. Finally, I'd like to remind you that the session is being recorded. A file containing the audio and the visual portion of the seminar will be posted to the Talking Freight website within the next few weeks. We encourage you to direct others in your office that may have not been able to attend the seminar to access the recording. The PowerPoint presentations used during the seminar are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online within the next week or so. I'll notify all attendees of the availability of the PowerPoints, the recording, and a transcript. One final note, today's Talking Freight is eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group, please ensure your name is typed into the chat box. While the seminar is not currently yet available on the AICP website, and I will send an email out once it is available for credits, you can download instructions from the file share box on the lower right side on how to obtain credits if you need more information. I also encourage everybody to download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit it to me after you've filled it out. We'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is America's Marine Highways. Our first presenter is Lauren Brand of the Maritime Administration. As a reminder, if you have a question during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered after the presentations. So with that, I'm going to bring up Lauren's presentation and turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. And I want to thank you very much for inviting us today and for having the topic of America's Marine Highway. There's been a lot happening, and I'm seeing some people sign in, looking at the names. I see people I recognize. I see friends for the program, and for those of you who have seen part of this presentation before, I apologize, but I guarantee that there's new information here today that nobody's seen. So we're going to split this into Part A and Part B, and we'll have Barb Nelson in the middle telling you what's happening on the ground, some real-life experiences. But let me start out with an overview of the program. This program is pretty new. It's just been established in 2007 by the Energy Independence and Security Act. And there's been a whole bunch of legal things that had to happen right on down to a grants.gov notice in September 2010. This slide shows an overview of what's been going on. Probably the most important document that you may want to access for future reference is the final rule that was published in the Federal Register on April 9th of 2010. That document, in addition to defining the program and defining projects, explained how to apply for a project and how to apply for a corridor. Corridor applications are still open and being welcomed, and project applications, we'll have another call for them later this summer. and the criteria will be very, very similar to what's in that final rule. At the end today, there'll be my contact info, so if you have trouble finding it or you just want us to send it to you, give me an email and we'll shoot an electronic copy of that rule right out to you. Could I have the next slide, please? So what are we talking about? What's so exciting that happened in 2007? Congress passed legislation making the waterways part of the surface transportation system. This really isn't a new concept. The nation moved the things by water tremendously before the highway system was developed in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. But then in the 70s, water use started to decline, and we used the road and rail networks a lot more. But now this third intermodal option is coming back. We're bringing it back to life, putting it in action, and we have a third option to work with on surface transportation. Next slide, please. This is the map that was on the MARAD website as of July 2010. And at the time, it was entitled America's Marine Highways. And basically, it was a map of the waterway systems of the United States. But they say flattery is a real compliment. So please, Federal Highway, take this as a compliment. We stole your idea of strategic corridors, and we put out a request for strategic marine corridors. You can do the next slide, please. We received quite a few applications, over 96 recommendations. A lot of them were duplicates and some were just partial waterways. So we put them together, and in August 2010, the Secretary of Transportation designated these areas as America's Marine Highway Corridors. Can you hear me okay?
It's okay. Fine. The projector's causing some background noise.
Oh, okay. So the corridors are mostly coastal, Great Lakes, St. Lawrence Seaway, and then some of the major inland waterways, and they're all navigable waterways. And these parallel congested highway and some rail corridors, mostly highway. Next. In September 2010, the Secretary of Transportation designated 8 projects, and these were marine highway projects. And that's where the big P's are. You can see they're all clustered east of the Mississippi, and a lot of them in the northeast United States. We received 35 applications for projects, and an interagency committee reviewed all of them, ranked them against the criteria, and nominated these 8, and the secretary agreed and designated them. And on that interagency team was Federal Highway, Federal Rail, Transit, of course, the Maritime Administration, and OST. And we had environmental, economic, and policy people, as well as the legal department on the team as well. So the applications were very thoroughly analyzed. In red are where the 3 grants were located. And last year, we had $7 million in grant funds awarded to the program, or I should say that we were allowed to distribute. And only if you were a designated project were you eligible to compete for the grant funding. So the grants went to the M64 in Virginia, which Barb Nelson will be talking about today, and they're going to be expanding their service. They had an existing marine highway service. The 10-Tom Bigbee Waterway is the line that goes north and south, and then that's a brand new service that will be between Mobile, Alabama and Itawamba, Mississippi. And then in the Gulf of Mexico, a grant was awarded to a service between Brownsville, Texas and Manatee, Florida. Next, please. We also awarded funds for 3 studies or cooperative agreements to look at 3 main waterways. And that's along the East Coast on M95, the West Coast on M5, and then M55 is the Mississippi River, and that's the third one. It's the inland waterway that we're studying. What we had proposed were we received project applications on those waterways, but those projects weren't fully developed to the point where they actually were ready to start a service or expand a service. But they had some darn good ideas and suggestions. They may have been missing one element that we needed to confirm them as a project. They might have been missing a market study, they might have been missing vessel information, maybe they didn't have their operating costs put together. So these cooperative agreements will be working on these 3 main waterways with the corridor sponsors and the designated initiative sponsors to identify those missing links that from their application and see what we can do to bring services together on these three main waterways. Next, please. In November 2010, we took a capture of the existing marine highway services in the United States. Now, you may look at the Mississippi River and say, why isn't that a dark green? Why does it just look like a corridor with no service on it? The Marine Highway Program focuses on containers, containerized and trailerized freight, and the movement of passengers. Right now on the Mississippi River, it's predominantly bulk with some break bulk and project cargoes, but there's no regularly scheduled container or trailerized or passenger service along the Mississippi. We actually don't count cruising as passenger service. It would be more of a ferry idea for this program. So you could see the dark lines and where they are. Now keep this in your mind. Keep where these few lines are. And next slide, please. Look at the dark blue lines and look at how many more there are. Based on the applications we received for projects, based on the people who have come to visit us just since November 2010, based on the presentations we've made that generated discussions and activities we're taking now, we believe within 5 years we can have active, regularly scheduled services in all of these areas around the country. We're working hard to make it happen. Next, please. We had the funding last year, and that's we're moving forward with those programs that receive funding, but we're working on other things as well that aren't funding related. And we call those our other resources. That final rule of 2010 gave us authorization to take 10 non-monetary related actions, supportive actions, that we could do to help the Marine Highway Program grow in the country. And these are some of the agencies and some of the actions that we're looking at, some of the things we're doing. We're working with Federal Highway on the Ferry Discretionary Grant Program. The Detroit-Windsor Marine Highway project that was designated actually received a grant. We're working with I-64 Express started out actually with a CMAQ grant and now has a Marine Highway grant. We're working with some grant programs from Tiger where they're getting infrastructure funds, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit. Next slide, please. We're reaching out on some planning grants, opportunities for some folks. There's a Potomac Ferry project that's being proposed, and we've been helping to steer them to some different ideas to look for assistance in getting their project moved forward. Working with the Department of Defense, and I'll talk more about that in a different slide, and we've identified some areas in FEMA that could help support marine highway initiatives and projects. There's port security grants that have been given out for about 9 years, and if the program is to continue, it's possible that it could provide some security to new marine highway services as well. For hazard mitigation, we're actually looking at the logistics plans for the movement of certain hazardous materials that move through congested metropolitan areas that could possibly be routed for part of their trip on a marine highway. So add the marine highway element to their intermodal hazardous material move. And we're just exploring that possibility right now. Next, please. And how does this really work? And this is where I'm going to turn this over to Barb Nelson to tell you what's going on in the field.
Okay, Barb, so we'll turn it over to you now.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, I do think that this really does work. I'd like to take about 15 minutes and share information about the 64 Express, a project that went from concept in October of 2007 when the economy was strong to a launch in December of 2008 when the economy was declining. It was a really tough time to be introducing a new surface transportation initiative, but the good news is that although tough economic times have endured, the demand for the service continues to grow, and we're positioning the service for expansion. While my planning background is varied and extends over 25 years, my experience in the port and goods movement transport arena was really very limited before working with the 64 Express. And if there's anybody on the webcast who isn't familiar with the great work that's being done by the I-95 Corridor Coalition and the work that they've done with MARAD over the past few years to advance the AMH initiative, please know that they're an excellent resource and you should check them out. And my participation in the Corridor Coalition's Freight Academy in 2008 continues to be a solid foundation on which I've been building my knowledge and understanding of intermodal connections. But jumping into the 64 Express, you can see on the screen we have a picture of our barge as well as the map showing the distance from the Hampton Roads area of Virginia up the James River to Richmond, which is the Port of Richmond is about 100 nautical miles inland, and it's nearly the same by highway. It connects Richmond with Virginia's International Gateway. The ports of Virginia and Hampton Roads. Our current service is weekly between two of EPA's terminals in Hampton Roads and the Port of Richmond. We have throughout the past 2 years run more regularly than once a week as demands for the service dictated. However, it is at a minimum a weekly call of service. In the future, we are anticipating expanding the service to two or three or potentially more times per week, as well as introducing an interterminal barge service between the terminals in Hampton Roads. Door service is available as the service has a strong relationship with the trucking industry, and we do consider this to be the service to be transit for cargo. It's an alternative to individual truck trips within the congested and constrained I-64 corridor. As Lauren mentioned, the Interstate 64 corridor was designated as Marine Highway and selected as an AMH project. Our funds have been used to purchase two barges, the existing one that's currently in service, and a second barge for service expansion. We will using the purchase of the barges, or the purpose for acquiring the barges, is to capitalize current operational costs and reducing the cost per box. As cargo moves on the 64 Express, it is international cargo. I think it's important for everybody to have an understanding of our relationship with BPA, the Virginia Port Authority, and Virginia's gateway to the global market. I'm going to move quickly through the next few series of slides and then focus back specifically on our project. Next slide, please. And Jennifer, if you can click through this as I'm talking. The all water route from Asia to the Port of Virginia, whether you go by way of the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal, is nearly equal. It's just over a 6% increase in distance by choosing one route versus the alternative route. As the Port of Virginia is also well positioned to the markets of South America and Western Europe. Next slide, please. The Port of Virginia, as I mentioned earlier, we consider it to be Virginia's international gateway. There are currently four existing marine terminals in Hampton Roads, Newport News, Portsmouth Marine Terminal, Norfolk International Terminal, and the APM Terminal, which was acquired through a long-term lease agreement in July of 2010. The current channel depth in the Hampton Roads area is 50 feet. There is on-dock rail for both Norfolk Southern and APM, at APM and NIT. And the Port of Virginia is within a day's drive of nearly two-thirds of the U.S. population. The mode split for import and export cargoes is currently 66% by truck, 30% by rail, and about 4% by barge. We are anticipating increasing the rail and barge numbers as we work to drive down the VMT associated with the truck. Next slide, please. As you can see, perhaps by comparison in the two slides, this is a tale of two ports. The multiple marine terminals in Hampton Roads and their inland rail port in Front Royal making up a very large mix of terminals within the Virginia Port Authority system, compared to the Port of Richmond, again, 100 miles inland. It's about 120 acres, located just below the fall line of the James River, and our draft is 22 feet. Dredging and channel maintenance issues, as well as night transit limitations along the James, do make barging an ideal market opportunity. Next slide, please. With those slides as background, I'd like to explain the dynamics of why this project has and will continue to be supported by our region. We've had many excellent partners, including Roger Bonnert with MARAD and Ivan Brucker with the Virginia Division of Federal Highways, and the two key partners who this project would not be a success without include Jeff Kiever with the Virginia Port Authority and Ed Whitmore with Norfolk Tug. To date, the Richmond Area MPO has allocated nearly $4 million in CMAQ over 3 years, and we anticipate continuing our investment from regional fund sources in support of port-dependent intermodal exchanges. Over the coming year, we will also be developing a port opportunity zone study where we will concentrate our infrastructure and development and development investment. There are three key reasons why the region supported the and continues to support the barge service running from Hampton Roads up to Richmond. One is transportation system performance. The transportation system in the I-64 corridor is highly congested. There have been several studies anticipating the expansion of the corridor, all of which have significant price tags. We see the barge alternative, or the transit for cargo alternative, as an opportunity to mitigate congestion and system capacity constraints associated with increased demand for import and export. There's also a system maintenance issue. In Virginia, nearly $200 million in damage is done annually to the road network associated with overweight cargoes. And when we evaluate that against the permit fees charged by, or the fees received to offset those overweight cargo impacts, there is a significant delta. And we believe that by allowing and encouraging cargoes to move on water, you can load the barge heavy and it won't compromise the system, will have a significant impact on reducing maintenance costs over time. We also see economic opportunities within our region for warehouse distribution and related industries, as well as environmental benefits. The nitric oxide and volatile organic compounds, which join together to form are the precursors to ozone in our region, are a trigger for our bad air days. And the barge, hands down, beats any other congestion mitigation project that we have considered and supported in the past. Next slide, please. This particular slide shows a selected distribution facilities using the Port of Virginia. The significance of this slide to the current and programmed expansion of the 64 Express is tied to the import-export balance enjoyed by Virginia's diverse economy. If you drop a box in Richmond, it can be loaded on the barge, go down the river to Hampton Roads. While you're there, you pick up your empty and return. You're reducing the total VMT in the I-64 corridor, as well as reducing wear and tear, and the fuel savings is approximately 65 to 70 gallons for a round trip between Richmond and Hampton Roads. In this past General Assembly session, legislation was approved by our General Assembly, which grants an income tax credit for usage of the barge, for usage of barge and rail cargo that moves containerized cargo through Virginia on the barge or the rail, rather than by truck or any other motor vehicle. and there's $50 credit for TEU, which begins with the taxable year beginning January of 2011. We see this as a significant commitment on the part of the Commonwealth of Virginia to support the barge and the opportunity and the alternative of barging as a component of the surface transportation. The surface transportation system. The map that's up, you can see the opportunity for many distribution facilities around Virginia that can drop that box in Richmond, it can be loaded on the barge, and downriver it goes, and the same for the box coming up the river. So we think that this it really does present an exciting opportunity, and we're very thankful that the General Assembly has made this commitment. Next slide, please. Just in conclusion, I've put the contact information for my project partners, without whom this project would not be possible and certainly wouldn't be enjoying the successes that it has to date. We are currently moving over 160 containers a week from the 64 corridor, and anticipate within several months to potentially be moving as many as 300 containers per week. I'll be glad to answer any questions as we move through the presentation.
Thank you, Barb. We're now going to go back to Lauren Brand to wrap up with the final presentation.
Thank you, Barb. That was really good. Next slide, please. So what else is the program doing? In addition to supporting and helping to develop new services and expand existing services, we're doing some other things to try to round out the program and extend the impact of the program. Next slide, please. We're working with the Navy, with their Operations and Logistics Office, on a dual-use vessel study. And right now, the Navy is looking at ways to maximize use of their assets. And they're extremely interested in a future vessel that would have a commercial application. And then in times of emergency or conflict, a certain percentage of those commercial vessels could be put into service for the military and then returned to commercial service. And there's ways to make it work. We're looking at policy, we're looking at practice, and we're looking at vessel requirements. So the Maritime Administration is doing a study right now on the commercial vessel portion. The Navy's doing a study, parallel study, on their military needs and the sizes, the facilities they would go to, the infrastructure that's available. And then we're going to be marrying the two studies to come out with the joint report. Next. We're the lead agency on an interagency cooperative effort to do a supplemental Missouri River study. And we're working with Energy, Commerce, and Agriculture to look at how to maximize the benefits of the Missouri River for navigation. This is a $2 million study, and our first interagency meeting is actually the last Monday of this month. So we're pretty excited to get the commitments from the other departments to work with us on this. It's a comprehensive study, and the reports should be issued in 2012. We'll be working very closely with the Missouri DOT and other stakeholders on that river as well. Next, please. We were involved in the Tiger Grants, and two Tiger Grants in 2009 received infrastructure funds to help with the purchase of vessels, landside equipment such as cranes. And that was Tiger One, that's it. And then Tiger Two, they were given money to build a terminal and extend a bit of a berth in Florida. So Tiger funds are being used for infrastructure development related to supporting Marine Highway. That was exciting to see us included in a bigger program like Tiger. Next, please. Maritime Administration has 10 regional offices, if you're not aware of it. Here's a map of where they're located and what their regions are. So a lot of times we get so many requests in headquarters for information that we think it's important for a person to get a human touch, and we can't always be flying around the country. So we're working now closely with our regional offices, and they're reaching out and having meetings and gathering information and working with people and helping them to apply for projects, helping them develop projects, even without the designations. There's an organization called the Marine Highway Cooperative. You could Google them and find their website. And they're developing an online benefits calculator that will come out next month. It's a planning tool, and it's going to measure items such as carbon, fuel savings, noise reduction, other air emissions. There's five different elements that it's measuring. I just can't seem to remember the fifth. And it's really good. The consultant that's putting it together for the cooperative is AECOM, and it's their European arm based in their UK office that's doing this. And they're doing it based on a lot of short sea shipping data that was found in the EU. So we're pretty excited about this coming out. It'll be available at no charge, and it should be pretty well advertised when it comes out. Again, if you're interested in this as a planning tool and you would like to see how adding a maritime component to intermodal planning could impact your public benefits, give us a shout and we'll give you the link to it once it's available. There's a Marine Highway Advisory Board that's being established by the Secretary, and that's going to be a subcommittee of the Marine Transportation Board that's being established. The committee's being established right now. They're vetting the list. And we had about 125 people apply to be on the board. That was pretty exciting. And the applicants were comprised of shippers, carriers, as well as port authority people, state DOT representatives, and the committee that's being recommended, if the slate's accepted by the secretary, will have members on it representing all different aspects. Everyone who touches the Marine Highway will have representation on this committee. And the committee's purpose is to identify and seek the solutions to things that hinder the use and the growth of short sea transportation. There's also a North American Short Sea Shipping Steering Committee. This was established in 2003. And the members are the Maritime Administration, so I'm lucky to have a seat on it, Transport Canada, and our counterparts in Mexico's Secretariat of the Communications and Transport. It's this group's goal to help grow short sea transportation services between the three nations. And this January, we met in Washington, and we came up with a five-year plan. And one of the big items in our plan is to identify congested border crossings and help develop short sea services that could supplement those border crossings. Looking forward to that project. What else are we doing? This year, we're working to advance designated projects, and we're supporting designated initiatives and trying to help them fill in the blanks so that they could apply for project status when it comes around this summer. We're accepting corridor applications all the time, and we got one so far this year, and we've gotten two calls that there's two others that people are proposing. We're expecting the dual use vessel report to come out. And then next year, already on our plate, we'll be designating new projects from the call for projects for this summer, and we'll be completing the supplemental Missouri River study. Unfortunately, there's no grant funds authorized for fiscal year 2011 or 2012 at this time. We're constantly doing outreach. Here's a list of some of the larger meetings that we're going to and what we're organizing. Not on this list are roundtables, and we're working with a number of communities to put together roundtables. And that would be where your local community stakeholders who could influence the development, creation, or expansion of a marine highway service would sit in the same room, and we'll talk about the opportunities for your region, what regions you connect with, what do you need to get a service started or expanded, and whether it's freight or passenger, we're happy to talk about either, or both. And at the table for these roundtables, we're inviting state DOTs MPOs, the Port Authority, Terminal Operator, carriers, which would include truck, rail, as well as water carriers. Shippers are invited, the Economic Development Commissions, and Chambers of Commerce. So anyone who could influence the process or the region are sitting down together and talking. We've held two of these so far, and there's been action items that resulted from both, and we've got another one on the plans right now, and then two more that we're eyeballing. So if you're interested in doing something like that, give us a call. Next. This is just a partial list of some of the people that we've been talking to, and I prepared the slide in November, so there's more I could add to it now, but the font would get so tiny you couldn't read anything. Our goal is to make maritime a routine part of an intermodal freight move and routine part of transportation planning. So we're challenging you. What can you do to help make this a routine item? Next. And here's our contact information. We have a website, needs to be updated, and we're working on that now. And there's my contact info as well. And I'm very responsive to email if you want to send me an email.
Okay.